Hello, everyone. This is your Separation Creation Workshop, Module 1, Instructional Audio. I'm Jenna Moyer, your workshop guide and legal strategist through these three modules of do-it-yourself style separation agreement preparation. And the purpose of these three modules is for you to replace the first 3 to 5 hours of attorney time so that you don't have to pay over $1,000 for an attorney to accomplish steps that you can do yourself using this workshop. And with a little coaching, I know you'll be able to achieve better results than if you had a lawyer doing this for you, because when I developed this workshop over the past several years with my own divorce clients, they reported that they had better success in their divorce overall when they were coached to hold their own dialogue with their ex rather than resort to paying for attorneys to talk for them. And I want you to have the same benefits as well. So just to give you a roadmap for our call, I'm going to quickly give you an overview of what the separation agreement process normally looks like so that you can go through this with your eyes open, knowing full well exactly what you don't want to replicate here in your own process and how you can improve upon the normal process. And I'm going to go over the worksheet with you and give you instruction. If you have not printed it out yet, please do so that you have it on hand when I go through that part of our audio here. And again, you can find that worksheet on our online workspace at separationcreationsystem.com, www.separationcreationsystem.com. And again, you have an invite that should have been emailed to you by now so that you can select your username, password, and gain access to our modules, our materials, and our support. So anyway, please do print out your Module 1 worksheet and have it on hand when I go through that part of the audio here. And I'm going to help you understand how to pick your topic. And I'm going to help you understand how to open the conversation with your spouse. And I'm going to help you to identify the communication styles and to just give you some helpful hints as you go forward so that you can make the most out of your Module 1. So let's go over a brief description right away to describe for you normally what the normal separation agreement process consists of. First, when somebody decides to get a separation agreement, normally one spouse calls their attorney, says, "I want a separation agreement," and they begin the process of drafting with that attorney. I would say 9 times out of 10, it's the initiator of the separation who is taking this step to contact their attorney because they're already mentally prepared for the concept of separation and they're emotionally accepting of and physically doing all the planning. But regardless of who actually retains the attorney, the process is almost always generally the same. One person goes to meet with the attorney, not both. Both spouses do not go see the same attorney because that would create a conflict of interest. And as this one spouse goes to meet with the attorney, after about 60 to 90 minutes of meeting with the attorney, there's been a lot of probing and intimate and sometimes embarrassing details about the marriage. And the attorney makes a list of all the things you have and what you want to do with them. And usually there's this second meeting or a series of follow-up phone calls that last another 60 to 90 minutes to firm up the details. And then the attorney drafts a 20 to 40 page legal document for you. The key is that it's normally drafted one-sidedly, because that's the nature of legal negotiation. It's to ask for more than you plan to receive and then let the other side talk you back towards the middle. Anyhow, once you review this document and sign off on it, the attorney is going to mail a copy to your spouse or, even worse, give you the copy to hand to your spouse and then send you off waiting for a reply. And that right there is where the process usually fails. and usually for one of two reasons. The first reason that the separation agreement process fails when an attorney does this is if the spouses have never, ever discussed a separation agreement before, it fails because the separation agreement is a foreign concept to this couple. And nobody made any effort to professionally grease the wheels or even assess the quality of communications between the spouses, which means there is zero guarantee that this 20 to 40 page document is going to be taken seriously by your spouse or that he or she is even going to read it, in which case you've just wasted your time and money. I experienced this all the time when I worked for other law firms. I would spend 5 to 8 hours drafting this very detailed and accurate separation agreement that the other side never wanted to consider. So they never did consider it. And then the parties ended up in a more expensive divorce litigation anyway, and my draft separation agreement ended up in the trash. The second reason that this process usually fails when an attorney proceeds as usual is, on the other hand, if this is not a contentious divorce, if the spouses did already discuss a separation agreement, it meant that they wanted to keep things amicable and be open and transparent and work together instead of becoming adversarial. But all that goes down the drain when one spouse hands the other spouse a really intimidating 20 to 40 page legal document with big black text on heavy white bond paper and really formal, unfamiliar legalese language that they now must go pay an attorney $300 an hour to translate into plain English for them. And that's when they realize that what's in the document does not reflect the conversations they had with their spouse. But nobody warned them that this was a negotiation. Nobody warned them it was always drafted one-sidedly and that they were always expected, as a matter of procedure, to submit a counteroffer and try to talk them back towards the middle, for this document to go back and forth and back and forth until they worked each other to a middle ground. But by then, it's just too late because the amicable mood of compromise was obliterated 20 pages and $1,000 ago because a typical attorney went through the typical motion to draft a separation agreement the typical way. And it never takes into consideration the strain that it places on your already precarious relationship. And it often just shuts down those critical lines of communication. So about the time I got sick and tired of working in typical law firms, I said, enough is enough. And I started brainstorming ways that I could stop being part of this problem and become part of a solution. So I began simplifying the separation agreement process into a more hands-on, organic, do-it-yourself style separation creation system, which you can use to evolve your own separation agreement through this group coaching format. And this is the first of your three modules. And the purpose of module one is to provide a diagnostic that will help you identify the quality of your marital communications regarding each of the major categories that are in separation agreement discussion. It might seem a simple step, but this is the most important step since you create a foundation upon which to build your separation agreement going forward. And truthfully, you could pay an attorney over $1,000 to do this for you. But why? I believe no one knows your relationship better than you. So through this diagnostic, you will use the worksheet and its three columns, red, yellow, and green, to identify the quality of communications on each of the topics in the left-hand margin of the worksheet. You're determining yourself which of the categories applies to you, because you know if you have minor children, or if you have a retirement account, or if your spouse runs a business entity. You don't need to pay an attorney over $300 an hour to do that for you. And if you have any questions, you can bring them to the coaching call for us to answer. Also, you already know your history of marital communications with your spouse, so you don't have to waste money paying an attorney to uncover any history of violence or abuse or other relationship imbalance which might affect open communication. You can determine that yourself. So let's go through some instructions for Module 1. I wanted to lay that foundation for you so you understand the purpose of Module 1, but let's go ahead and go through the actual Module 1 worksheet. So I hope you've printed out the Module 1 worksheet. It is a PDF with four columns. At the top it says Separation Creation System, Module 1 Diagnostic. You'll see there are discussion topics listed in the left-hand column, and a red, yellow, and green column on the right side of the page to write your observations in. There are, of course, many forms of communication, verbal and nonverbal. So we're going to take consideration of all of them, and I want you to write your notes and condense your experiences into these columns. And we're going to try first to identify what communication looks like in your relationship. And this is something that a professional does when assessing communication styles, to take each topic in isolation, not to lump them together, not to try to take on two or three in one conversation, literally to let each topic stand alone, take each topic in isolation. I want you to know it is very easy to make emotional assumptions instead of intellectual assessments. And you paint the process with one large brush stroke that you've compiled over the years and years and years being inside the marriage together, and oftentimes it's easy to say, oh, he won't agree to anything I say, or, oh, she just wants to bankrupt me, or it's really easy to look at the communication style overall and say, eh, we always end up arguing, so I'm going to go down the left-hand column and say, no talking, no talking, no, no, no. Part of the real exercise of Module 1 is going to be to get out of your own way. Allow yourself to stop assuming so that you can begin assessing. I've tried to make it as easy for you as possible by taking these talking points that we've listed on the left side of your worksheet and doing the exercise, even if you think you know the outcome, to identify what the real quality of discussion is that you're likely to have with each topic, to give you the most accurate assessment of how to prepare your separation agreement. So going down the left-hand column of discussion topics, I want you to cross out anything that 100% does not apply to you. For instance, if you do not have minor children, then you will cross out legal custody, physical custody, and the child care topics because they 100% do not apply to you. If there's anything you're not sure about or you don't know whether you have it, for instance, if you're not sure whether your spouse has a retirement account because you just never talked about it, or if you're not sure whether your spouse has a business venture because you don't talk about it, then it's open for discussion. Don't cross it out. You're going to take those remaining discussion topics from the left-hand column, the ones that have not been crossed out, and You should be ready to begin mentioning these in passing. When you open the conversation, I want you to reflect back to our opening kickoff call when I was explaining the different reasons for separating. If you recall, I explained that there's three reasons that people separate, that one reason is to work on the marriage. The second reason is for people to actually avoid divorcing and stay permanently separated. And the third reason is to actually segue into divorce so that there able to start planning and preparing for that process right now. Once you know what your reason for separating is, so pick a quiet time to open up the conversation with your spouse and use your three-part conversation starter as follows to correspond to whatever reason you have for separating. So, for instance, the first part of your conversation starter is to explain why this even came on your radar. Hey, I was doing some reading, or hey, I was poking around the internet, or hey, I was attending a support group and I learned that ... Here's where you can fill in the blank with whatever your motivation is for separating. So again, let me reread that for you. Hey, I was doing some reading, or if you prefer, hey, I was poking around the internet, or if you prefer, hey, I attended a support group and I learned that ... If you were the type of separation that wanted to work on the marriage, you would say, I learned that temporary separation can be a really helpful method for rehabilitating the marriage if we coordinate with a counselor. I'll say that again. I learned that temporary separation can be a really helpful method for rehabilitating the marriage if we coordinate with a counselor. All right, but if you're not the one working on the marriage, that's not going to apply to you. So maybe you're the type of separation that really just wants to be a long-term separation in order to avoid divorce. So then you would fill in that blank by saying, I learned that separation is an alternative to divorce. Again, I learned that separation is an alternative to divorce. If that's not you either and you're really just looking to segue into your divorce process, you're the third type of separator, then you would say, you would fill in the blank with, I learned that separation is the next step for us to wind down the marriage. Again, I learned that separation is the next step for us to wind down the marriage. That was the first of your three-part conversation starter. That's sort of the opening icebreaker to explain why this is even on your radar. But here comes the second part, which is going to help get them engaged. Why do they care? The second part is where you say, but it's financially and legally and parentally dangerous for us to be completely exposed while we're living apart without any protections in place. So I wanted to explore us doing a written agreement together. I'll say that whole sentence again. But it's financially and legally and parentally dangerous for us to be completely exposed while we're living apart without any protections in place. So I wanted to explore us doing a written agreement together. Now, you may have heard terms like settlement agreement, separation agreement, marital agreement, they're all the same thing. It just is going to be the title of your document to apply to whatever your circumstances are. If you're not getting a divorce, you're not going to be calling this a settlement agreement. So those of you who are a type 1 separator who want to work on the marriage, you're going to be calling it a marital agreement. Those of you who are looking for a long-term, durable separation, you're going to be calling it a separation agreement. Especially if you're right after separating, you're going to be calling it a separation agreement. Those of you who are already into the throes of the divorce and are really looking to get the divorce done, you're going to call it a settlement agreement. Either way, that's just what the document's going to be titled. I want you to know if your spouse throws any of those terms at you, you're talking about the same thing. You're going to take all of those terms out of it and just say, I wanted to explore us doing a written agreement together. Okay, so that's the second part of your three-part conversation starter. Your last of the three-part conversation starter, part number three, is going to be you diffusing any of the risk or responsibility of your spouse. You're going to say, if I do the research and I bring you the talking points, would you go over them with me? It will save us a lot of time and money and stress if we can cooperate together to do this. Otherwise, we have to hire lawyers to do this simple stuff, and we can discuss it better ourselves. I'll say that one more time. If I do the research and bring you the talking points, would you go over them with me? It will save us a lot of time and money and stress if we can cooperate together to do this. Otherwise, we have to hire lawyers to do this simple stuff, and we can discuss it better ourselves. That's your three-part conversation starter. Once you get their assent, you know that they're ready to consider the conversation that's about to unfold. This is why it's going to be so important that you not ambush them with a 20 to 40 page legal document. Because if they're not actually prepared, if they're not mentally even engaged in the idea of this written agreement, they're going to resist something that's thrown at them just because it's unfamiliar and it's frankly scary and intimidating. So this is a very important step for you to open the conversation. Next, you're going to identify the type of communication that you have with your spouse. You're going to go down the left-hand column. You're going to pick individual times to ask, do you think we can calmly discuss? And then fill in the colored columns on the right to identify whether you and your spouse can talk openly about the topic, or if talk is strained or argumentative, or red column if talk is non-existent. And you'll include a short statement to describe why you're placing the topic in that particular column. Do you think we can calmly discuss? If they say yes, then you're good to go. You're going to put it in the green column. If they say no, then say, follow up with, okay, then how would you prefer to approach that topic? And just listen to what they say. Make that note in the yellow column if there was any resistance to the question. Do you think we can calmly discuss? And then follow up with, okay, then how would you prefer to approach that topic? And then make your note in the yellow column. Once you begin touching upon these topics with your spouse, you're going to get a sense of whether each topic is open or closed for discussion. I want you to know that arguing is not non-communication. Arguing is failed communication, but it is not the absence of communication. Non-communication, as described in the red column, literally non-talking, the absence of communication, is when somebody slams the door or storms out of the room or slams the phone down on you or gets violent in any way by throwing something or making threats of harm. So if anything is said at all, it's either going in the green or the yellow column. I want to take a moment to really impress upon you that it is extremely imperative, super important to conceal your worksheet. Please know there will never be a need to take this worksheet out in front of your spouse. You will never need to show this worksheet at all to your spouse. You will never even need to hint this worksheet exists. If you need to read notes when speaking to your spouse, then instead of reading from this worksheet, handwrite your conversation starters on a separate scrap paper or a blank sheet of notebook paper so that you don't accidentally expose this confidential worksheet. The reason that it's so important that you not accidentally or intentionally expose this worksheet to your spouse is that it becomes a major distraction for them. They oftentimes start to get very defensive when they see a brightly colored worksheet with any sort of tips or strategies or any sort of tools. They feel like they're left out, and they feel like they want to get a copy of it. Oftentimes, when workshop members or clients have made the mistake of exposing this to their spouse or leaving it lay out, their spouse says, hey, what's that? I don't have that. Can I show a copy to my attorney? And the answer is no. We don't want them to get more bent out of shape about the fact that you're using a do-it-yourself tool that they're not informed about. We don't want them to distract from the ultimate importance of the conversation, which is to talk about the topics, not focus on the worksheet. Normally, these are the discussion topics in the left-hand column that an attorney would be thinking about when spending 1 to 3 hours talking to you about your marital history. And then they would firm up the details for each category with you during the second and third follow-up call. But you don't need an attorney to vet the issues for you. You already know what you've got, and I've listed them here for you so that you know what are the major categories of discussion topics and that you can strategize accordingly. Again, any questions you have, please bring them to the coaching call so that we can help to troubleshoot them for you and get some clarity for you. Now, I have some helpful hints for you when you open this conversation with your spouse. Helpful hint number one, wear light colors. Wearing dark colors can seem sinister. And I put a lot of psychology into developing this workshop so that we can streamline it for the best, most optimal outcome for you. So please do make every effort to wear light colors when you broach these conversation starters with your spouse. Another helpful hint is that if you anticipate any of these topics to be a troublesome topic or a sticking point or a very contentious hot button issue for your spouse, save it for last. Please make better progress on some of the less contentious issues before you hit on that hot button one, because it could literally unravel the rest of the dialogue going forward. Please save the difficult ones for last. The third helpful hint I have is to just do your best to mention them one at a time. I try to say preferably in totally different conversations, because you really need to try to isolate your spouse's response to each topic without overlapping the response with multiple topics. It can get really confusing to separate which topic received a negative response if you've mentioned and overlapped several topics at one time. Okay, so next, what I wanted to touch on with you, one of the most important steps in any separation process is clearing the path to communication. Whether you realize it or not, there are many barriers to effective communication. And we're bombarded with these barriers every day, just like we're bombarded with communication every day. So we've kind of become desensitized to the barriers. But when it comes to effective communication, we need to try to eliminate as many of these barriers as possible in order to ensure success. What are barriers to successful communication? Well, they include message overload, physical barriers, attitudinal barriers, ambiguity, individual linguistic ability, and physiological barriers. Those are the ones that are the most important for us to touch on. Let me go through each one individually. First, I mentioned message overload. That's when a person receives too much information at the same time. That's why I've itemized each discussion topic, and they're meant to be taken individually for you to step away from it and then come back to it to discuss a totally different topic under the umbrella of a totally different conversation. It helps to cut down on complexity and overload. The next barrier to communication that I mentioned are physical barriers. Those are often due to the nature of the environment. So, for example, the natural barrier which exists if you're conversing from different locations, for instance, by phone, could be the fact that there's background noise on one end, which in turn interferes with effective communication. Sometimes there's kids present. That's a physical barrier because they're tugging at you, trying to ask for this and that. You're not focused on the conversation. Your spouse isn't focused on the conversation. It's important to know that physical barriers are actually an impediment to the success of these conversations that you're trying to have. So do your best to eliminate them during the conversation period. The next barrier that I mentioned are attitudinal barriers. And attitudinal barriers come about as a result of personality conflicts, which can result in people delaying or refusing to communicate. The personal attitudes might be due to a lack of motivation or dissatisfaction in the marriage, or just resistance to change, perhaps due to entrenched attitudes and ideas. Either way, an attitudinal barrier will become a barrier to successful communication. Ambiguity, as I mentioned, it's probably the most familiar of them. They're words that sound the same but actually have different meaning and can convey a different meaning altogether. It's really important that the communicator makes sure that the receiver is receiving the same meaning. And that's why I seek to avoid complex or confusing legalese during these really important formative steps. If you want this to be a successful agreement, you want to talk in regular vernacular. You want to be able to speak directly into the language of your spouse, not lawyer speak. That's why it's most successful if you can have these initial conversations yourself. I also mentioned individual linguistic ability. The use of difficult or inappropriate words in communication can really prevent people from understanding your message. Poorly explained or misunderstood messages, or having a spouse from a different country whose primary language is not English, these can also result in confusion and sort of piggyback off of the ambiguity. But just recognize that if individual linguistic ability is a problem, then you want to be able to take a step back, slow things down, and make sure that you're addressing this barrier to communication before it becomes a problem. The last barrier that I wanted to talk about are physiological barriers, and they can result from an individual's personal discomfort. Maybe it's caused, for instance, by being ill at the time or being in physical pain at the time that you're trying to speak to them. They cannot focus on the importance of your message if they are distracted by being sick or physically in pain or hungry. Make sure that you're not picking a time to talk about these things when somebody could be distracted by their physiological barriers. I've taken all of these barriers into consideration when creating this system and designing these worksheets so that you don't have to go into this blind without guidance or a roadmap. But again, it's really important that you not show your spouse these worksheets because this is going to be your private journaling in preparation for your prospective divorce. You're going to tell your spouse that you've been researching topics that are important for prepping. And you can even admit that you've attended a support group and that you've asked some questions about it, but just do not show your spouse these worksheets because these are self-written documents that could be used against you in the future. I know that might be hard, and this will probably be the first exercise in boundary setting for some of you because you're so used to being intertwined with your spouse in every way. You're just not going to be comfortable drawing a line in the sand to carve out some personal space for yourself. But this really is necessary because there's almost a 50% chance your separation will not reconcile and will end in divorce. That is the statistic we discussed during the kickoff call. 6 out of 10 separations do reconcile, but that means 4 out of 10 do not reconcile and will end in divorce. So together, we are hoping for the best, but we still must prepare for the worst. With that, I look forward to hearing from you. So please do bring your questions on the Module 1 coaching call on Thursday, and we will work through them together. Okay, here's to your support and empowerment. Thanks for listening, and good night, everybody.